is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, history was made last night. Senator Sanders speaking to 10,000 people in the arena in Madison, 3,000 people standing outside trying to get in. 13,000 people showed up for the senator from Vermont in Madison. Now, I went to the homepage of the New York Times. The last time I did this was maybe 30 minutes ago. I started at 8 o'clock this morning and searched the word Bernie. They didn't even do an article about it. Time Magazine, their website, I can't find anything there. The corporate media, by and large, the cable networks, some of them have mentioned it in passing, and when they do, they basically ridicule it. They say, oh, yeah, Madison, they have big demonstrations there. They hate Scott Walker. Those people show up in big numbers. What's the big deal? But let me ask a question. If Rand Paul had pulled 10,000 people into a stadium last night, or Jeb Bush or Chris Christie, or Hillary Clinton, for that matter, or Martin O'Malley, anybody who's a political insider, don't you think that the networks would have, you know, not the big networks, but the cable networks would have at least, like, broken coverage to cover it? Now, Chris Hayes, to his credit, did actually break coverage last night, but it was before Bernie started talking, and Rachel had some nice things to say. She said, yeah, I feel the burn. She mentioned it. You know, good on them. But this is actually a big news story. This is a huge political news story. I said on Lawrence O'Donnell's show 2 days ago, Bernie Sanders could be the next FDR. We started the hashtag, Bernie, next FDR. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. But, and there's an interesting piece. I mean, the only news media I can see that's actually covering this is Drudge. And of course, they, you know, if there's anything that they hate, it's Hillary Clinton. So, you know, why not cover Bernie Sanders, right? But like I said, you know, like Bernie said, don't underestimate me. There's, you know, this guy has a lot of juice and a long way to go. This is the last day of the live week. Tomorrow is the 4th of July holiday. And typically we would have Bernie on as our Brunch with Bernie guest today in this hour. But I suspect he's recovering from the speech last night. I mean, it was an amazing thing. Louise and I laid in bed and watched it, not live. We watched it after it had happened and just, you know, set a computer between us and watched it on YouTube. You can see the whole thing on YouTube. It starts about an hour in, I guess. You know, they did like a 5-hour cut or something of the whole thing. But it's a hell of a speech. And I just wanted to share with you, since the corporate media will not, I promise you, I guarantee you, the corporate media will not communicate most of these messages, because these are messages that the corporate media and the other big corporations in this country and the rich people who control them really don't. They're really afraid of. They're actually afraid of it. I mean, you have opposition researchers now apparently working for Hillary. They had on Jean Shaheen T-shirts, or at least one of them did. And that campaign has been largely absorbed by the Clinton campaign in Vermont. And once again, I think Hillary Clinton's a fine candidate, and I would work for her to become president. That said, I think this is an indication that they're starting to take Bernie seriously. She had a couple of her opposition researchers, apparently, showed up in Vermont a day or two ago, going through the 30 boxes of Bernie Sanders papers that they have at the I think it's the University of Vermont Library. It might be the Burlington Public Library. All his papers from when he was mayor of Burlington 30 years ago, when he was in the House of Representatives, all this kind of stuff. So anyhow, let me just share with you some of Bernie's speech last night. Here's clip one. This was the first thing he said. It was brilliant. Here it is.
Let me just say a few words to my friends in the Republican Party about extremism. When you deny...
Shane, pause that. He set that up by saying, I was welcomed to town. The Republican Party bought a billboard to welcome me to town. And the billboard says Bernie Sanders is an extremist. And by the way, we've edited all these clips to take out the applause because the applause lines were so long, I couldn't play a lot of these clips for you if we didn't. So you'll hear them being choppy, and it'll sound like he's just getting a little applause. The applause lines actually ran on very longer. So here's his response to the Republican paid-for billboard that said something like, you know, I haven't seen it, but Bernie referenced it in his speech. You know, Bernie Sanders is an extremist. Here he is.
Let me just say a few words to my friends in the Republican Party about extremism. When you deny the right of workers to come together in collective bargaining, that's extremism. When you tell a woman that she cannot control her own body, that's extremism. When you think a woman is a child and can't purchase a contraceptive, that is extremism. When you give tax breaks to billionaires and refuse to raise the minimum wage, that's extremism.
So, you know, this is like, you know, Claire McCaskill, who had you know, was on Morning Joe and had attacked Bernie Sanders as being an extremist or a socialist or something. Somebody asked, please name three policies of his with which you disagree. And she got this deer in headlights look. I mean, she was there as a Clinton surrogate. She got this deer in headlights look because I frankly think she doesn't know. I think that the insiders in this town, the political insiders, are clueless about what's going on the streets out in America. I really think they don't know it. Here's clip number two. This is Bernie from last night.
But our views, which represent, in fact, the vast majority of the American people, are a little bit different. We believe that the time has come when people in Wisconsin, Vermont, and all over this country create a political movement which says to the billionaire class, you can't have it all.
No.
And what we are saying to the Koch brothers, Governor Walker, and all of those people is that this great country and our government belong to all of the people and not just a handful of very wealthy people.
See, and this is, again, something I would be very surprised if the billionaires who own the network media and Comcast, who provides us with this lousy internet service that keeps dropping here in this building, now has renamed 30 Rock to the Comcast building. Isn't that interesting? Well, they own NBC and MSNBC, so what do you expect? I doubt we're going to hear a conversation on either of those networks about net neutrality, for example. Anyhow, I just don't think that they will play that clip. I can't imagine it. Do we have time for another one? We don't. We're running out of time. Okay, I'm gonna continue. We've got 20. Geez, how many of these do we have? 20. No, we got 30. We got 30 clips of Bernie Sanders speaking last night. I'm going to be playing them through this first hour. We'll intersperse them with your calls. It's Anything Goes Thursday on the 4th of July, on the edge of the 4th of July weekend. We'll be back in just a few moments. And, you know, so stick around. I think you're going to be blown away by the things that Bernie said. And I would, in particular, after I've played a lot of these, I would like to hear from my conservative and Republican and independent listeners. I mean, everybody's welcome to call, but I would, in particular, love to find out if anybody's having their mind changed or if they just think he's crazy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, you know, let us know. We'll be taking calls and playing clips for the rest of the hour. Maybe all 3 hours. I don't know. We'll see how the day goes. And welcome back. Oops. Hang on just a second here. Somehow my computer is just running really slow, and I'm not sure why. Bill, watching Free Speech TV in Wilmington, Illinois. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to give you a call. I was at the Wisconsin rally last night,
mm-hmm.
and I volunteered as an outside crowd control. And here's, we had people from Michigan and actually an elderly couple that flew in from Florida.
Wow.
This is no joke, because I was out there doing the work.
Wow.
And Bernie gave a great fiery speech, and we had to lock the doors because it had 10,300 people there.
Wow. And what happened to the people outside?
Made us lock the doors.
What happened to the people outside?
What's that?
What happened to the people outside?
We got everybody in.
Oh, you did?
Okay. Because we got everybody in because the volunteers were told at the beginning we couldn't go in.
Oh, geez.
It maxed out, but we just got in under the, yeah, you know, under the wire. So right, it was a great event. But one thing, if I can comment, and I've been doing this for decades, volunteering on campaigns, one thing that really worries me about Bernie's campaign, he is woefully, woefully understaffed.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, so when you get a chance to talk to him, you know, off the air,
I don't
need to get more people to help him because he's a vibrant 73, but he's 73.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No,
Bill,
one
he's,
can run.
I don't advise Bernie, and I don't advise his campaign. I know some of my friends and colleagues have, but in order to maintain my integrity as a talk show host who will support whoever the Democrat is. And also because, you know, they've got good advisors anyway, and they've got good people working over there on the campaign. I don't know if you noticed that the outgoing president of SEIU, Service International Employees Union, who just, you know, left his job, so he's retired now, just volunteered to work on the Sanders campaign. I'm hoping that they can find or somebody will volunteer some high profile African Americans, or at least, you know, at least one who can carry that message to that community. Because Bernie, by talking about economic justice, by talking about returning our jobs, I mean, this is the most crucial stuff for the African American community in the United States. And I think that it's, you know, it's so easy to think that Bernie's message is not, you know, it's not about race, but I think it really is. I think it's about repairing America, and part of that, I mean, he mentioned race a few times last night.
It's all about the 99%, all of us.
Yeah, all
Asian,
of us.
Asian, black, Latino, white.
Yeah, exactly.
It touches all the bases, but I just wanted to give you a call. It was wonderful. It was fiery, but I hope he can get more help.
Yeah.
He can't do it alone.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, Bernie does things the way he likes doing them, and he loves the town halls. He's been doing town halls 2-3 times a week for 30 years. He just loves meeting with the people and talking with the people. And you know what I really got last night was that Bernie was this in his teenage and early 20s. He was probably that nerdy kid who knows, you know, America's going down the tubes. Look at what Ronald Reagan's doing, and nobody took him seriously. And he's been singing that same song for 30 years. And now that nerdy kid is, like, you know, candidate for president of the United States. And now people are taking him seriously because now people have woken up to what he saw 30 years ago. The Reaganomics was killing America. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and I'm gonna do call clip here for a while, so try to keep your comments relatively short. David in Loves Park, Illinois. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was at the rally myself last night, but like your last caller there during the commercial break, I didn't volunteer my time, but I have an arm in a sling because I had surgery, but that's beside the point. Anyway,
okay.
I wanted to call and give my perspective. I mean, it was obviously a great speech, largest crowd apparently of all rallies. It was the largest.
Right.
But I wanted to really touch real quick on, and I failed to say this to your call screener. I apologize for that. But last, apparently a statement was put out by the executive director of the Wisconsin Republican Party. And I just want, it's a short quote, and I'm just going to read it real quick. And this is how out of touch these Republicans are, and I think this probably goes perfectly with the billboard that Bernie had talked about. It says, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are both candidates of yesterday whose extreme policies negatively impact hardworking families and makes it harder to achieve the American dream. That
so,
is an actual statement
yeah.
that man put out.
So they're playing the age card. Scott Walker's a young guy. And And they're lying about their own policies. That's astonishing. That's astonishing.
It's
okay, David, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for sharing that with us. Okay, let's go to clip number three here. This is Bernie from last night.
Let me be very clear about this. This campaign is not about Bernie Sanders. It is not about Hillary Clinton. It is not about anybody else. It is about you. It is about putting together a grassroots movement of millions and millions of people who stand together and make it clear that we need fundamental changes in the economics and politics of this country so the government works for all of us and not a handful of wealthy campaign contributors.
And let me say, by the way, if Hillary Clinton wants to call into the program and do an hour of Q&A, please. If anybody from the Clinton campaign is listening, I like Hillary Clinton. And with Bernie, I don't ask him questions, right? He the first block, he just kind of rants for eight, nine minutes, you know, tells what's on his mind, what's been going on, and then he takes questions from our callers. And if Hillary wants to do that for an hour, I would love it. Martin O'Malley, we may do this. We're talking to his people. I haven't heard from or heard back from Lincoln Chafee, and we also extend the exact same invitation to all the Republicans, all of the declared Republicans, all, what is it, 36 of them now? 13, I think. Okay. So we just played a clip, right? Okay, then let's take a call. John in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a injured 30-year meat cutter, and I've never supported anybody's campaign in my life but Bernie Sanders. And, I should throw in that I supported Paul Wellstone's campaign to the end, too. And I just can't think of anyway, this morning, Bernie was in Rochester, Minnesota this morning.
You're kidding.
He drew pretty big crowds there, and you haven't heard one single word about it anywhere, have you?
No, I haven't. Any idea what the size of the crowd was?
It filled up the arena they had there with some people not being able to get in. So I'm imagining around 4,000 or 5,000.
Wow, in Rochester, Minnesota.
That was at 9 a.m. this morning. I was in Madison, Wisconsin. It's about 5 hours from where I live, and I was in Madison last night. I was in. Tom, I'm worried about the establishment going after Bernie.
Well, it's happening. It will happen. I mean, Claire McCaskill has been doing hit jobs on TV on him. No specifics. And the Republican Party is busy pointing out his age and trying to conflate him with Hillary Clinton. And the Clinton campaign apparently has sent a couple opposition researchers to the University of Vermont Library, or somebody has. So they're starting to take him seriously. I think that the insiders are looking at this outsider and going, holy cow. I mean, he has the potential to do what Ross Perot only dreamed of. And although it's very different than Ross Perot, I think he has the potential to pull a Ronald Reagan, basically. Nobody thought that Reagan could get the nomination for the Republican Party. He tried twice. Finally, on the third time, he got it. And then once he got it, nobody thought he'd win because he was that crazy right winger, right? And he won. Now, we can talk about how he won. I'm not real pleased about, cutting a deal with the Ayatollah to keep the hostages for a year. But still, he giving a speech in Philadelphia, Mississippi. But still, he won. And it was considered a long shot candidate. And he transformed America. He ended Keynesian economics. And he moved us into libertarian economics, and we've been there ever since. And Bill Clinton and Barack Obama have continued those policies. So, anyhow, Rochester, Minnesota, this morning, thousands of people, amazing. John, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to KTNF. We got 1 minute. Okay, here's one more clip. Then, clip number four.
That in order to win this election, it goes without saying that we need a strong grassroots movement, an unprecedented grassroots movement. But let me say this to you also, and this is something that no other candidate will tell you, and that is that nobody in the White House, no matter how good he or she may be, can address the major issues facing working families and the middle class without an active, politically conscious grassroots movement.
Yeah. And I even went to TPM this morning, which surprised me because I thought, you know, I always thought TPM was pretty much a progressive site. But I don't know. Maybe they're just late getting the news up. Or maybe Josh Marshall and his buddies just want to be Washington insiders and therefore don't want to talk about an outsider. Because as I keep telling you, it's not about left or right. It's not even about Democrat or Republican. It's about the insiders versus the outsiders in this election. That's what happened with the Tea Party wave. It was the outsiders who basically, they didn't take over the entire Republican Party, but they got John Boehner in an uncomfortable position, shall we say. And I think this is the same thing. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Anything goes. Summer, your calls, and Bernie Sanders' speech after this. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. These are actually substantive policy issues that Senator Sanders is talking about. And I'm playing the, you know, those of you who are longtime listeners to this show know that I've done entire shows, entire days, in fact, where I just went through dozens and dozens of FDR clips or John Kennedy clips or Dwight Eisenhower clips because they said something. They just didn't do these banalities. I mean, Scott Walker has now, you know, he was, you know, when he was in Wisconsin, you know, he was, and running for governor, he said, well, you know, gay marriage is not that big a deal. Now he's in Iowa. He's trying to be a right wing, you know, nominee. He's like, oh, I'm going to constitutional amendment to stop it. He flip flops on these issues over and over again. This is the third major one that he's flip flopped on. And it's because, you know, he's a politician. He's putting his finger to the wind, or his polling companies, or the very, very expensive consultants and pollsters that the Koch brothers are buying for him are telling him, no, say this. Well, nobody's saying that to Bernie. What Bernie has been saying since he was 22 years old. So, anyhow, we're going to go back and forth between clips and calls. Here is clip number 5.
And that is what this campaign is about. What this campaign is about is creating a political revolution in America. A revolution which takes on the greed of Wall Street and corporate America. A revolution which takes on the reality that the Republican Party is essentially owned by big money interests, and too many Democrats are owned by big money interests.
Interesting. I'm looking at Politico. I just looked at Politico. The top story, the book Ted Cruz really wanted to write. The second three stories, Hillary's shadow, Obama will badger Scott Walker in Wisconsin, and GOP Congress could be trouble for Obama in Cuba. And then other stories, Jeb Bush's Korean sugar daddy, Hillary Clinton's missing $200 million man, Holbrooke decline and fall as told in Clinton emails. These are three stories about Clinton. Soros helps pro-Clinton super PAC to haul $20 million. Fourth story about Clinton. Jay Johnson, counter-terror warriors, social butterfly. And the last one that's got a picture on it over Politico is, sorry, Donald Trump has a point. Really? Actually, what the article points out is that the majority of Asian immigrants into this country, I think it's South Korean, more than half of them have advanced degrees. So, you know, it's kind of the best and the brightest fleeing to the United States. Not the majority of people coming from Mexico have degrees. Well, duh, Mexico's a poor country. South Korea has been, you know, using the trade policies that we used to have to become a very wealthy country. But I don't think Donald Trump has a point anyway. I think Donald Trump is a blowhard. Okay, that was a clip. So now we pick up a phone call. Catherine in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Catherine. You are on the air. Catherine, listening on the mic. Okay, let's try Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Charles, you are on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Tom. I love your show.
Thanks.
About Bernie?
Yeah.
I guess this might be two questions in one, but my question is, would he be interested in putting a WPA style, you know, sort of work program together?
He has said on this program before, Charles, that he believes that the government should be the employer of last resort. And that's what the WPA program was. It was, you know, if the private industry is not going to hire people, we will. Government will. So,
and let's not forget. I'm sorry.
So I'd guess the answer to your question is yes, Charles. And I think he's said it many times.
Okay. And let's not forget that if we do elect Bernie as president, that he also needs help in the Senate and in the House.
Yeah.
You've seen we've got a Democratic president, but he can't do anything by himself. And I think that's really why he let this TPP go through. To be honest with you, I think the only way we got the Supreme Court to uphold marriage, gay marriage, and also the funding for the Obamacare was because he had to make a deal for the TPP. Now, as far as Bernie is concerned, I do want to have one last question. There are questions about churches being burnt in the South.
Yeah.
There's a Confederate rally that's coming up for the Confederate flag where you're going to have Ku Klux Klansmen.
Right.
My question is basically, are those the people that the flag really represents, the Ku Klux Klan? And if it is, you know, why are we still standing behind and waiting for these, you know, guys to make up their mind on the flag?
Yeah, I'm with you. I in my opinion, the Confederate, the Northern Virginia battle flag, which people refer to as the Confederate flag, the original Confederate flag was actually a white flag with that battle flag in the upper corner, is the official flag of the Ku Klux Klan, and we'll see where that goes. You asked the question, would Bernie support a WPA kind of program? Clip number 15 talks about that. So, Charles, thanks for the call, and here's Bernie answering your question himself.
Now, when pollsters go out and they ask the American people what is uppermost on their mind, what are they most worried about? The answer always is a four-letter word called jobs, J-O-B-S. When you have real unemployment of 11%, youth unemployment over 30%, now is the time for a federal jobs program to create millions of decent paying jobs.
And he had pointed out prior to that that African-American youth unemployment is over 50%. And, pretty grim. Okay, so call clip. Catherine in Madison, you want to try it again? Catherine, can you hear me? You are on the air. Something funky about Catherine's phone, I think. Let's try Claudia in Deer Isle, Maine. Claudia, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Hi.
Okay. What's up?
I'm calling because, of course, you wouldn't know that. I'm a total Bernie supporter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to get Elizabeth Warren involved in executive work, too, if she will actually consent to run with him.
Yeah.
I worked for John Anderson in 1980, and it's been a long time since there's been people who could do the work. I also wanted to tell you that I'm concerned that you can't watch the TV you want at your house, that you have Comcast or something or whatever it is, or some other cable.
Yeah, we got Comcast.
You can get a satellite dish at your house.
Yeah.
You get whatever you want.
Well, I can, you know, we there's not anything I can't watch. The reason I don't watch so much television is because I work on an 11 or 12-hour day. And I just, you know, and I don't find that much of value on television. I mean, it's astonishing. I'll sit down and start watching a program, and I'm like, this is just the normal pablum. This is the dumbed down to seventh grade level stuff. I mean, there's just not a great deal of substance that I'm finding on television.
CCTV and Link TV. So that's all I use it for. But you were talking about something on that you couldn't see all the way because you only got so much selection. I thought, let's go about this.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all. Thank you. You're wonderful. I love how cannot imagine how you do the work you do.
Thank you. No, I'm having fun, Claudia. I'm having fun. I am. I very much am. Thank you for the call. Okay, let's go to clip number 6. Wealth inequality is the issue of our time. This is Bernie Sanders last night.
The issue of wealth and income inequality, to my mind, is the great moral issue of our time. It is the great economic issue of our time. And it is the great political issue of our time.
I mean, this guy sounds more and more like FDR with every sentence. Ron in Yuba City, California. Hey, Ron, thanks for listening to Sirius. What's up?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 50. I have never contributed to a politician, and I am 100% behind Bernie. I'm going to give him $100. It's not a lot, but every little bit helps. I will support him till the end. If Hillary is the candidate, I will support her. But what I like about Bernie is he's just truthful. He's honest. He could have ran as an independent. He doesn't want to mess up the election if he's chosen. I think that speaks highly of him. And what I love about him most, Tom, is he's not a prostitute for these big corporations.
Right.
He can't be bought.
Yeah. Yeah. You look at his list of campaign donors. And, you know, there was a list this morning over on Democratic Underground, as I recall. And, yeah, it's basically unions and individuals, and unions represent individuals, of course. And then you look at some of the other candidates, and it's the top, the big banks, you know, the banksters and whatnot. Thank you, Ron, for the call. Okay, that was clip number 6. Let's go to clip number 7.
This grotesque level of inequality is immoral. It is bad economics, it is unsustainable, and it is not what the United States of America is supposed to be about.
And do we have time to play a 49-second clip, Shano? Nope. Okay. All right. Well, let's go to clip number 10.
So our job, in fact, is to create a new criminal justice system. Our job is police department reform. Our job is to make sure that young African Americans can walk down the street without being abused or worse. Our job is to have the best educated population in the world, not the country with the most people in jail.
He was talking about, you know, criminal justice system reform. We really need to fix it from the top down. And we really do. We have more, as Bernie pointed out last night, we have more people in prison than any other country in the world. That should not be the legacy of America. You know, I realize it was, you know, Reagan's and Nixon's racist war on drugs, but it should not be the legacy of America. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour. It's Anything Goes Thursday Summer, and we'll be taking your calls, and I'm going to be playing clips from Bernie's speech last night. Okay, let's just take a call here. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Good morning, Dr. Tom. Well, it's still morning for me. I made my vote for Bernie when I ordered my I Love Brunch with Bernie Bear. And Bernie is my candidate. And so far as I'm concerned, these people who don't have any faith or they don't want Bernie are nuts. If they think Bernie is too old, they need to do some research. You can use any engine you want to pull up the biographies of these people like Orrin Hatch, John McCain, and one of my senators, Shelby. Shelby will be 82 next year at the election. If anybody's worrying about Bernie's age, they need to look at these people who are 10 years younger who are making our law. I mean, 10 years older who are making our laws.
Right.
But what really scares me is that they have a man named Jim Webb waiting in the wings to be put on the Democratic ticket. And he has a Navy background, and I don't want a president who will take us to war with Russia. And also, if Bernie is president, We need Sherwood Brown because he's one of the few people who has a background in Russian studies to be our vice president or our secretary of state.
Sherrod Brown?
He can handle. Yes.
The senator background. From Ohio has a background in Russian studies?
Yes, you can look this stuff up. It's very easy.
Like I did not know.
Search engines are great things.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and anybody who really wants to support Bernie, they need to do like that guy Charles said. Get out and look at the people that are serving you now. Did they vote for the TPP in the House or any of the other programs? Did they did their senator vote for it? And please remember that they also took $711 million out of Medicare over the next 6 years to create job training, which is handled by the Department of Labor, which has employment services and a job training program already. Right. Aren't those people already funded?
Well, sort of. What they're expecting is that once the TPP passes, there'll be a large number of Americans who are going to lose their jobs to Vietnam and Brunei and Malaysia, where they allow slave labor, things like that.
Yeah, and so, you know, if you really want Bernie and you really want him to be able to fix our country, we are going to have to give him a foundation to work with.
Right.
And that means primarying these people. Finding somebody, you know, Tom Clancy used to write in his little books about sending your preacher, sending your pharmacist, send your plumber, send your neighbor to Congress. And we have people, particularly women all over this country who work in administrative positions, who know how to handle a business. Turn around and look at them and see if you've got one you can send to the House or send to the Senate.
Right.
But like I said, I'm worried about them I think they know Bernie is a serious threat. They were very critical last night on The Last Word, and that made me angry.
Really? On Lawrence O'Donnell's show?
Yes. Huh. You really do need to get the satellite, because then you can watch Amy on Link, and you can watch the documentaries that are so important.
Oh, I can watch Amy right now. We've got a Roku box, and we can easily pull up Free Speech TV on the Roku box.
Yeah.
It's just like I said, I start my workday around 8:30, and I end it around 9 o'clock, a.m. and p.m. And it's just there's not much time to watch TV in there. But Amy Goodman is wonderful. She is the Walter Cronkite of our day. Norma, thank you for the call. Great to hear from you, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Minutes before the hour, I got 30 clips here from Bernie's speech last night. We're not quite 10 through, but there was one that was such an echo of another speech that I heard that I want to play the other speech first and just juxtapose these for you, and then I'll pick up the next call. This is Ted Kennedy in the year or so before he died on the floor of the United States Senate speaking to the Republicans about greed. Here he is.
$240 billion in tax breaks for corporations, $36 billion in tax breaks for small businesses, increase in productivity, 42% over the last 10 years. But do you think there's any increase in the minimum wage? No. What is the price? We ask the other side. What is the price that you want from these working men and women? What cost? How much more do we have to give to the private sector and to business? How many billion dollars more are you asking? Are you requiring? When does the greed stop?
Ted Kennedy. So, here's Bernie Sanders last night, clip number 8.
This campaign is sending a message loud and clear to the billionaire class, and that is, you can't get tax breaks when children in America go hungry. You cannot continue to send our jobs to China when millions of Americans are desperately looking for work. You can't hide your profits in the Cayman Islands and in other tax havens while we have so many unmet needs in America. You're going to have to start paying. The greed of corporate America and the billionaire class has got to end, and we are going to end it for them.
And these are the clips that you will not hear on network television. You will not hear on any of the networks that are owned by billionaire families or that are run by multi-billion-dollar corporations and multi-millionaire CEOs. You will not hear these. I'm just telling you. You won't hear it on the radio. You won't hear it on television. You're hearing it here, and you can find it on YouTube. So, anyhow, we're going back and forth, calls and clips. So, call Pat, listening on KTNF in Star Prairie, Wisconsin. What's up, Pat?
Tom, I was down in Rochester this morning. There were so many people I couldn't get in. Rochester is interesting. It's a city of 125,000 people, and it's a very Republican city. It's probably got the highest concentration of Republicans of any city in the state of Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And the amazing thing is, I estimate, I know the arenas down there seats about a little over 5,000. Now that's in the seat, so I don't know how many people they had on the floor there. So because it's, you know, it's a multi-purpose arena that they play sports in, et cetera.
In Rochester.
In Rochester, Minnesota. But the I estimate between 3,000 and 4,000, maybe as many as 5,000 people that were outside the arena trying to get in.
Which means that if there were 5,000 people inside the arena, he had another 10,000 person turnout in a town of only 120,000 people.
That's right.
Whoa.
And it's it's only a 2-hour drive from Minneapolis to St. Paul. That's what's nice about it. And I live right on the Minnesota-Wisconsin border, in Wisconsin, of course. And as I go right down the border there, and it's about 20 miles inland from Minnesota when you're driving down the border there.
Right. And he was in Minneapolis on Wednesday, wasn't he? He had 5,000 people, and they were turning people away. Yeah, amazing.
The Star Tribune, which really irritated me, said there was a little under 3,000. There was 6,000 people outside. There was actually 3,000 people in Minneapolis inside the arena, but there was 6 to 7,000 people outside. You could not get in. In Minneapolis, I started walking the crowd and asking people where they were from. Right. I identified students from at least 12 colleges and universities in Minnesota, in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. But there were students and people there from over 12 states. It was just and I did this for about a half an hour. So it was just uncanny how far people had come to hear him in Minneapolis.
We are looking at and experiencing a political earthquake here, Pat. This is a momentous moment which the corporate media and the insider politicians are going to do everything they can to ignore. And what's the old saying from Gandhi? First they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they fight you, then you win. And I think Claire McCaskill started the ridicule part a couple of days ago, and now we know that the opposition researchers have shown up at the University of Vermont for the Bernie files. So then they fight you is about to start. Pat, thank you for the call. Let's go to clip number 9 here. This is about youth
unemployment. If they are white, youth unemployment is 33%. If they are Hispanic, youth unemployment is 36%. If they are African American, youth unemployment is 51%. In my view, maybe, just maybe, it makes sense to create jobs and educational opportunities for these young people. Maybe we should create jobs and educational opportunities rather than more and more incarceration and more jails.
There you go. Time to put our jail industry down and go with this. Anita, what in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita, we have just a minute to the end of this hour. Quick one.
I'll try. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I was listening to Fox and Friends this morning, and they had on one of these dial testing, like a Frank Luntz type company, and they put a clip of Donald Trump, Chris Christie, and Bernie Sanders on, and it wasn't even one of Bernie Sanders' best. They gave Donald Trump got an F. Chris Christie, according to this dial testing company, probably a conservative dial testing company, Donald Trump got an F. Chris Christie got a C-, and Bernie Sanders got a B+.
Whoa. See, this is my point. I don't think he has said anything so far other than calling out the Republicans as extremists that the average Republican voter would not agree with.
No, and they did not look happy on.
Yeah, I can imagine they didn't look happy. Bernie Sanders beats Donald Trump and Chris Christie on Fox. Amazing. Anita, thank you very much for the call. Thanks for sharing that with us. And thanks for watching Fox so I don't have to. We'll be back with more. It's Anything Goes Thursday / summer. And we still have 19 Bernie Sanders clips to share with you. We'll alternate them with your calls.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Anything Goes Thursday. We're going to be alternating clips from Bernie's speech last night and your calls. But before we get to that, I wanted to, there was just this amazing story about why Detroit didn't have to go bankrupt and why Chicago shouldn't have to go bankrupt, and basically the scam that that the insiders, I'd say, you know, the Republicans in Detroit and I don't know, maybe Rahm Emanuel in Chicago, are running. This is Naomi Klein's Disaster Capitalism on steroids. Saqib Bahti is with us, the director of Refund America Project, RAP, and the and a fellow with the Roosevelt Institute. Refund, refundproject.org is the URL, is it not, Saqib?
It is.
Yeah. Okay, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So tell us, why didn't Detroit have to go bankrupt? And why did it go bankrupt?
I mean, Detroit went bankrupt because there was a plan at the state level by state officials to really push it into bankruptcy in order to be able to slash the city's pensions and to take over to regionalize the water department. Municipal bankruptcy is entirely a political decision. There were definitely many structural problems that the Detroit faced, but at the end of the day, the reason why it went bankrupt was not because its finances weren't healthy. It went bankrupt because the Republican legislature and the governor that came in after the 2010 elections, they saw bankruptcy as the best way to slash pensions, and that was they came in their one slash pensions, and that was the means to the end.
And they had to pay for those tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. So that I want to say Rick Snyder, that's the governor, right?
Yep.
Has been promoting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the bankruptcy, the thing that was not touched at all was corporate subsidies that the city was paying out to various millionaires, billionaires, for moving their offices downtown.
Right. Okay. So, what's the story with Chicago?
I mean, we have a similar situation where Chicago and Illinois more broadly, we have one of the most regressive tax systems in the entire state, in the entire country, where poor people pay a greater share of their income in taxes than the rich. Two-thirds of corporations don't pay any taxes at all in Illinois. And you have a place where the tax system is just set up in such a way that it lets the rich people and big corporations off the hook and pushes all the pain onto the people who can least afford it. And so they then use that to try to say, look, like, you know, your taxes are way too high, and so we have no choice but to try to push, you know, great big cuts. Our pension obligations are way too high. We have to file bankruptcy to get out of them. But the reality is that they don't need to do that. What they need to do is figure out how they actually start taxing the immense wealth that does exist in Chicago instead of pushing all the burden on the people who actually don't have it.
Right, and the pensioners specifically, among others.
Pensioners among others.
Yeah. This is essentially neoliberalism. You know, it's destroy the poor and the working people, take away the social safety net, and make sure that the very, very rich get richer. It's astonishing. Who's behind this in Chicago?
I mean, it's, you know, there's a few different actors. Just the politicians, we're seeing this coming from, I'd say, both Rahm Emanuel, but also our new governor, Bruce Rauner, who's
a Republican,
private equity firm manager. He was elected in 2014, just last fall he was elected. And his thing is, you know, he's trying to run the state the way the private equity firms run companies, which is you slash and burn and do whatever you can to extract as much value for those at the top, for your investors. And of course, in his case, the investors are his campaign contributors.
Right.
Whereas
a city should be run for the benefit of the residents of the city instead of just the billionaires.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's an amazing story. Saqib Bahti, the director of the Refund America Project, RAP, and a fellow with the Roosevelt Institute, refundproject.org is the website. The article was in thesetimes.com. The article is titled, Why Chicago Won't Go Bankrupt and Detroit Didn't Have to. Saqib, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
It's great talking with you. It's a great story. So, okay, back to our Bernie clips. We really ought to, you should find that FDR, you know, they hate me and I welcome their hatred, because it is Oh, you got it? Why don't you play that right now? Oh, now that you said it, you don't. Okay. Well, let's go to clip number nine then. This is Bernie. Well, we just did that, didn't we? Yeah, let's go to 11. Let's go to clip number 11. Here's Bernie from last night.
But to my mind, the federal minimum wage of 7¼ an hour is a starvation wage which must be raised. The minimum wage must become a living wage, which means $15 an hour over the next few years. Now, I don't think it is a terribly radical idea to say that in America, if somebody works 40 hours a week, that that person should not be living in poverty. And brothers and sisters, a living wage should not only be fair, it should be equitable. There is no excuse for women making 78 cents on the dollar compared to men.
Now, elsewhere in the speech, and I'm not sure if we have the clip of this, Bernie talked about how 100 years ago we had this battle, we had this conversation. And, yeah, we don't have the clip of it, but it's in the speech. You can see it. And it was a progressive who was pushing it, but he was a Republican. It was Teddy Roosevelt. And he was calling for a living wage, which is what Bernie Sanders just called for. And this is a fairly bad recording. Thomas Edison made it himself. It was back in the days of the wax cylinders. But here is Teddy Roosevelt saying, "We stand for a living wage." I'm going to do this from memory as much as I can, and then so you can understand what he's saying when he says it. "We stand for a living wage. A living wage will vary depending on industrial occupations from community to community or from place to place, but it must contain these essential elements." And then he goes through and he says it must be enough to raise a family with morality. In other words, you don't need to steal for food. It must be enough that to provide for the education of the youth. There must be enough to provide for recreation. In other words, you can take a vacation every year. It must be enough to provide for sickness. You know, in other words, you should be able to pay for your doctor. And it must be enough to provide for a decent retirement in old age. Now, this was before Social Security. Here's Teddy Roosevelt from 13 years ago, 1907, I think it was. Maybe it was a little later than that. Here's Teddy Roosevelt echoing Bernie Sanders, or maybe vice versa.
Stand for a living wage. Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupation. The monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions, but must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living. A standard high enough to make morality possible, to provide for education and recreation, to care for immature members of the family, to maintain the family during periods of sickness, and to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
There you go. That was Teddy Roosevelt in around 1910 in that neighborhood. And once again, do we have 51 seconds, Shane? We don't. Well, we can start it anyway. Here's, you want to replay clip 11 at the very beginning anyway.
But to my mind, the federal minimum wage of 7¼ an hour is a starvation wage which must be raised. The minimum wage must become a living wage, which means $15 an hour over the next few years.
There you go. Teddy Roosevelt in 1910 saying we need a living wage, and Bernie Sanders last night saying we need a living wage.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The progressive tradition lives on. We'll be back with your calls and some more clips from Bernie's speech as we continue through the program. 15 minutes past the hour. You said John McCain was a Teddy Roosevelt fan? That's what he said when he was running for president? Amazing. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt created the national parks, and John McCain just took one of those national park areas that is used as a sacred site by the Apaches, and him and Jeff Flake, the two senators from Arizona, gave it away to Rio Tinto, to the Australian mining company. That's astonishing. That's really sad, actually. Let's see. Brant in Nashville, Tennessee, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Brant What's up?
Yes, hello, Tom. Your guest at the top of the hour mentioned Detroit. I think it was, $17 billion they were in debt. And he mentioned both pensions and the water system. Well, they're planning on privatizing that. The debt of the water system was $6 billion out of that $17 billion. Right. And I just want to reflect back that we're in a four-year cycle of what could be a 10-year cycle of drought in California. And Bernie's talking about a revolution and jobs. We need to look at manufacturing as a return to the earth and feeding the earth as it feeds us, because the Bureau of Labor Statistics says less than a million people are currently agricultural farmers, and that number is decreasing by 3%. If we're going to have a revolution, we need to decentralize from California and start to consider agriculture as a manufacturing job, because it doesn't get much more manual than that. No. We could improve some of the conditions for the workers, make it more easy for them to harvest. But without a grassroots campaign, it's not going to happen.
We're seeing this start, Brandt, in places like Detroit. Urban farming is huge. In these old abandoned lots, they're turning out garden communities. We live about five blocks from from one of DC's old projects. Literally the low income two story housing. That's rent subsidized and all that. The projects, and right across the street from them, on M Street, they've got a huge public park that has been turned into a community garden, and it's filled with people gardening out there every day. But to take that beyond that, I think returning to the family farm, starting to, a lot of these family farms, I grew up in Michigan, and you'd have, communities, once you get outside Lansing, you'd have communities where you'd have, basically 100-acre farms after 100-acre farm, each one run by an individual family. They're growing multiple crops. They're doing, my wife's grandmother, in fact, had a 100-acre farm in Michigan. And they all got bought up by giant ag companies, and the people living there are now working for those giant ag companies. They had to sell their homes and everything, and they're basically tenant farmers. And I would say, to meet the goal that you're laying out, we need to start breaking up those big corporations and returning these family farms to the family farmers. What do you think?
Yeah, something new. Yes, it's decorporatizing, deprivatizing. I mean, in Detroit, if they privatize the water, they can control the growth of the agriculture.
Well, I think the Sherman Antitrust Act could be applied to agriculture fairly easily. And it's just my own personal opinion. Brandt, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Senator Sanders pulled over 10,000 people last night to an arena in Madison, Wisconsin, which they were ridiculing on Morning Joe today, and then apparently pulled thousands of people this morning at 9 o'clock this morning to a big venue in Rochester, Minnesota, which nobody is talking about because he's like the Energizer Bunny. He keeps doing it, and thousands of people keep showing up. There is a political revolution happening in America that the mainstream corporate media does not want to talk about. And, of course, neither do any of the other candidates. And increasingly, I'm figuring out from just looking at the websites, which of the so-called progressive websites are actually the insider corporatist websites who side with the left, versus the websites that are, shall we say, genuinely progressive or genuinely independent. I think independent is the right phrase. Okay, here's clip number 12. Senator Sanders talking about family values last night.
Many of our Republican friends are very deeply concerned about family values. They love families. And their view of family values is that women should not be able to control their own bodies. Their view of family values is that women should not be able to purchase the contraceptives they need. You know, when I say these things, it really is hard to believe. Can you imagine? And their view of family values
segue them.
Is that gay people should not be able to get married.
And here is our view of family values.
Now that is their view, their warped view of family values. Let me give you another view of family values. I have four kids. I got seven beautiful grandchildren. My wife is here. We've been married for 27 years. I believe, and you believe, in the importance of family. And that is why. Because we believe in real family values, the United States must end the international embarrassment of being the only major country on earth that does not guarantee workers paid medical and family leave, that does not guarantee workers paid sick time or paid vacation time.
There you go. Bob, in Belvidere, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, Bob, what's up? Bob? Got to be careful with that mute button. Steve in Chicago, also listening on WCPT. Hey, Steve, can you hear me? Steve? Uh-oh. Don't tell me Comcast dropped our lines again. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Johnny, are you there?
Yeah, and if they had any reason to drop anybody, it would be me, considering the history of my calls.
What's going on is we've got, you know, the Comcast has apparently given us a bad router, and it drops packets and weird stuff happens.
Your landlord is, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think the Heritage Foundation is trying to screw us. I just think Comcast is having problems with old. I mean, it may not even be. You know, explicitly their fault, although when was the last time you called them, Shane, about fixing this? It's just been a couple of days, right? Yeah. And, you know, it's just, what can I say? It's an old building. Johnny, what did you want to talk about?
Well, I wanted to give you some good news, share with you, because I know you put in a long day and you admit that you can't watch as much TV as you might like or need to. So let me just share with you, I'm a regular consumer of MSNBC evening political news programs, specifically Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally I'll view some of the other ones. And I will tell you that Rachel and Chris, but Rachel the most, she reflects your point of view and your analysis the most, very close. Where I criticize MSNBC is that she will do a great piece on the war or arms history, but then when they go to break, they'll play something from an arms deal, you know, one of those arms makers,
right,
like Grumman. Or she'll do a great piece on the oil industry and how they're being polluting the environment left and right. And she gives a great history and stuff, but then they'll play ads from BP Oil. So that really confuses listeners and viewers who are peripherally aware. And I think that's where they fall flat a lot, is the ads that they take.
That's a problem with commercial media, and you know, we have that same problem here with this program. Occasionally somebody will send a note to me saying, do you really endorse this payday loan company that's advertising on your radio show? And I'm like, I don't endorse any payday loan companies, but if it's a local station and they're running an advertiser, I have no control over that. So, you know, And I don't, you know, Rachel has no control over her advertisers, so I don't think we can criticize her for them. I think we just have to understand that that's the nature of media. And
right.
But I do actually, you know, I get home from work around 8:30, and so I usually catch the last half of Chris Hayes' show and the first half of Rachel's show, and then Louise and I go to bed. And I agree with you. I think that they're both doing a great job. I think Lawrence O'Donnell does a great job too. Go for it.
She does talk about net neutrality a lot. So does Chris, to their credit. considering who owns them. So I will pass that along to you.
Oh, that's good. I've not heard that conversation.
They give footage just like Amy does. So that's a good thing. My only criticism of them is that they're too pro-war as a network. That's my major criticism, and they play the petroleum ads.
Well, my fear is that now that it's the Comcast building rather than 30 Rock, and the Comcast family is very, very conservative, that you're going to see MSNBC start taking a swing toward the right. But, you know, they're promoting Morning Joe, for example, their number one right-wing show, throughout the day very, very aggressively. So we'll see where it goes. Johnny, thanks a lot for the call. And thanks for listening, or thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
It's also Anything Goes Thursday, summer here. And, if you want to call on things outside of Bernie, feel free. But we're going to play some more Bernie clips. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, and it is Anything Goes Summer and Thursday, and clip number 14, this follows on his conversation about family values, how the Republicans think that family values means, preventing women from getting access to birth control. He thinks that family values means paying people a decent wage so that they can spend, and giving people sick time so that they can spend with their families or they can spend with themselves if they're sick, or maternity leave. Here he is, this clip number 14 about paid vacations.
Today, unbelievably, 85% of working men and 66% of working women work more than 40 hours a week. 100 years have come and gone, and we have lost ground. Now, at the very least, what the United States must do, and I will do as president, is to make sure that every family in this country gets at least 2 weeks off of paid vacation.
There you go. And, his reference to the 100 years, that's going back to Teddy Roosevelt and his, we stand for a living wage. Indeed. Let's see here. Dominic in Argyle, New York. Hey, Dominic, what's up?
Hey, how are you, Tom? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You asked for some people who are changing their minds. I've listened to a lot of your programming with Bernie, and I'm coming to his side. I mean, I've had discussions with you. I'm a strong Second Amendment's right person. I have some libertarian views, so I guess on paper I would be described as an independent, but he personifies most of what my values and my concerns are for this country.
Yeah, and that's why I think he can actually win the White House, because people like you who consider yourself independent or centrist, people who even consider themselves Tea Partiers. I mean, I've had Tea Partiers call the show and say, I haven't heard Bernie say anything I disagree with yet. Yeah. Dominic?
I would ask this of people, because I'm coming up on retirement soon, and I've never worked on a campaign of any political, but I'm looking at working on his to make a movement to get what he needs, because he does need a grassroots movement.
Oh, he really does. And
we're sunk because of the money.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, some of the people that he's running against, both in the Democratic primary and in the Republican ticket, are raising mind-boggling amounts of money, and they put that money out. That becomes the story du jour. Oh, look at how much money they raise. But then they have to buy political consultants. They have to hire political consultants to tell them what to say and what not to say. Bernie doesn't do that. Bernie's just Bernie.
He gives you what's on his mind, and if you agree with it, go for me. If not, and I like that. That's perfect.
Secondly, they have to hire staff to run their meetings and things, and Bernie just takes volunteers. And now you've got this guy who was the head of the AFSCME, of the American Federation of Service Workers, I think, Service Workers Employees, that just retired. And he's like, I'm going to go to work for Bernie Sanders as a volunteer. And so a lot of people are going over to BernieSanders.com right now and saying, I can't give a lot of money, but I can give you a month of my time. or I can give you a week of my time, or I can give you a few days, or I can sit on the phone and make phone calls. And so even though Bernie's only raised, the last number I saw was 9 million. Hillary was at 25 million, I think. And Jeb Bush is going to be at 100 million. Pardon?
35 million, Hillary, as of this morning.
Yeah, okay. And so Bernie's probably raised, somewhere in the neighborhood of a little less than half that. But if half of her money is going to pay for people that will do the same work for Bernie for free, I mean, we really can have a grassroots movement that doesn't require a billionaire funding it and doesn't, and the Bernie won't have to take money from Citibank I got the list here. This is the Citigroup, Goldman Sachs. These are the major donors to one of his opponents on the Democratic side. Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, DLA Piper, which is a big law firm here that lobbies on behalf of corporations, Morgan Chase and Company, Emily's List, which is a good group. Time Warner, the type is so small I can hardly read this. Lehman Brothers, University of California. That's an interesting, that they're now we're down to $200,000 gifts, but in any case, Bernie is not beholden to anyone. It's and that I think is a good thing. So Dominic, thanks for the call. Back to clip number 14. That was number 14. So we'll go to number 15. We played this before in response to a caller's question, but let's play them again. Clips 15 and 16. You can just bump them back to back. Here we are. This is Bernie on do we need a WPA? Do we need a CCC? This is Bernie doing, earlier he was doing a Teddy Roosevelt impression. Here he is channeling Franklin Roosevelt.
Now, when pollsters go out and they ask the American people what is uppermost on their mind, what are they most worried about? The answer always is a four-letter word called jobs, J-O-B-S. When you have real unemployment of 11%, youth unemployment over 30%, now is the time for a federal jobs program to create millions of decent paying jobs. In virtually every state in this country, our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, water systems, wastewater plants, our rail system, our levees, and our dams need an enormous amount of work. Now is the time to invest in rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. A $1 trillion investment will create and maintain some 13 million jobs, and that is exactly what I intend to do.
There you go, Senator Sanders. Diana in Agoura Hills, California. Hey, Diana, what's on your mind? Diana? Okay, if you can't hear me, if you can hear me and I can't hear you, just call us right back. We'll put you on the air. Devin in Houston, Texas. Hey, Devin, what's up? No Devin. Jim just lost one of his Comcast lines. We have three Comcast lines coming into this building or coming into these studios. If you get dropped, call us right back. Terrence in Omaha, Nebraska. Terrence, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you.
Okay, great. What's up?
Oh, hey, I just want to say I'm very excited because Senator Sanders will be here tomorrow, well, not in Omaha, but across the river in Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Oh, really?
And I plan on, I got an RSVP invitation via email from him a couple of days ago, and I'm expecting a lot of people will be there. But my thing is that, I mean, besides my excitement here, because I feel like this is like, once in a lifetime thing, because I really admire this man and I really hope he becomes a Democratic nominee. Tom, what can I do? I make a lot of Facebook posts and Twitter comments about Bernie Sanders, but what can I do to get the black community aware of Bernie Sanders? Because they're not.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody I talk to that's black, they don't even know who he is.
Which is really sad because Bernie Sanders actually has an arrest record. In 1963, he was arrested at the University of Chicago with the Congress on Racial Equality, CORE, a black group, demonstrating against segregated housing because they still had segregated housing at the University of Chicago in 1963. Bernie Sanders has been, you know, he was, and maybe it was actually before 63, because I think it was 63 was the March on Washington, wasn't it, with Martin Luther King? And he was
right,
he
right.
was there for that, too. I mean, he wasn't up on the stage with Martin Luther King. He was there as a young man who was supporting that effort. Bernie has a civil rights record that goes way, way back. And he's been talking about black unemployment on this program forever. And his program to put America back to work and put us back together is absolutely the thing that, in particular, the urban African-American community needs. Because our cities used to be set hubs and centers of manufacturing. And when the manufacturing went away, the jobs went away. And then you've got, you know, poverty. And so, yeah, I'm with you, Terrence. And you know, Bernie doesn't pander well is the problem, I think. And I don't mean that in a bad sense. I mean, it's not like he doesn't explicitly reach out to women or explicitly reach out to Latinos or explicitly reach out to African Americans. Instead, he tries to say to all of us, we are all Americans. We are all in this boat together. Yes, there have been, you know, he earlier talked about how black youth unemployment was over 50%. That's unacceptable. How women shouldn't make 76% of what men make. He points those things out. But in his mind, it's all about the money. At the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, is the money going to go to the billionaires or is it going to go to the people? And if it goes to the people, then it helps everybody regardless of race.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what else I can do, you know, because I've had conversations like, you know, with people at my college, you know.
Yeah.
And
I thought, you know, one of the
aware of him.
One of the things that I thought was just hysterical was last week, and you can find it probably over at democraticunderground.com, somebody posted a clip. The title of it was Bernie Sanders' arrest record. And then when you read the post by the DU member, they pointed out that back in the 60s, Bernie Sanders was arrested. And in fact, he talked about it on this program last week. And he normally doesn't, Bernie doesn't brag on himself anywhere near enough, you know. Bernie Sanders was arrested in his early 20s as part of CORE, the Congress on Racial Equality, protesting segregated housing at the University of Chicago, which is where he was going to college. Yeah, so you might want to dig that out and push it out, Terrence.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Because Bernie's been there from the beginning. We'll be back 15 minutes before the hour. And welcome back. Let's see here. John in Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, John. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
I don't see things as a liberal or conservative or a Democrat or Republican situation anymore. I see them as a capitalist versus everybody else, basically.
Yeah.
And I suspect, I don't believe in the Illuminati or any kind of conspiracy. However, I see them coming from a similar social and economic stratus. They go to the same private schools. They go to the parties in the same circles. You see something like the Powell memo, which is addressed to a certain socioeconomic group. So even though there's not a kind of an Illuminati, there is a definite collusion. I don't know how you'd say it. Collusion that exists amongst these people.
Yeah, and it's all out in the open. I mean, you know, they have the business roundtable. They have meetings. I mean, they're private meetings, but everybody knows that they're doing.
Right.
The 200 largest CEOs.
The problem is, I think there's a very specific agenda. They know what they're doing. They know what they're shooting for. And the thing that they want most above all is money to get power and power to get more money.
Right.
If you notice on the last, the point that I'm leading to and see what you think about it is the point, the last several Supreme Court decisions this week, you know, we're all happy about it and it's great in and of themselves. However, you know that Roberts has led a Supreme Court that has okayed Obamacare, except that he's put it in terms that it is a legislation that can be repealed. And on the gay marriage thing, basically what's going to happen is it's going to become another abortion issue. And basically they are really shooting for this next 2016 election because they've gerrymandered the House. If they get the Senate and their presidency and that allows them to solidify Supreme Court, can you imagine? Level, you know, just I guess go look at what the Koch brothers' list of things to do.
Yeah,
here.
I mean, if look at this. Bernie Sanders pulled over 10,000 people last night in Madison. This morning at 9 o'clock in Rochester, Minnesota, a little town of 120,000 people, he pulled several thousand people It's broadly not being discussed in the mainstream media, and it needs to be, you know, and because, you know, it's the insiders versus the outsiders, in my opinion. And the Supreme Court rulings, the next president is going to select probably three or four Supreme Court justices. This is, you know, one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime. So I think that, you know, if Bernie Sanders' message gets out and he becomes the nominee, and that's a big if, you know, Hillary Clinton is formidable. She's a good candidate and she's got a lot of money with her. But if he becomes the nominee of the Democratic Party, then I think that will ignite a grassroots movement across the United States that will cause. First of all, I think the Senate's going to go Democratic anyway. You got twice as many Republicans defending their seats as Democrats in this election. And then secondly, it's not going to take that many. It would take about 30 seats to take the House. And yeah, there's supposedly only 20 or so seats that are in play because of the Republican gerrymandering. But don't underestimate a wave election. And I think Bernie Sanders has the potential to do what Ronald Reagan did and what Franklin Roosevelt did and what Abraham Lincoln did, which is, you know, be the underdog who comes from behind and just sweeps the thing and transforms American politics. I mean, time will tell. And maybe I'm a dewy-eyed, you know, idealist. But I think I'm a pretty clear-eyed realist. John, thank you for the call. Up next, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Welcome back to the program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? Is Hobby Lobby a person? No, they're corporations. Come on, give me a break. Anyhow, let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org, and Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today?
So BP today agreed to pay $18.7 billion to settle all federal and state claims arising from the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill. Now, that'll end most litigation stemming from the deadly accident. That's what federal authorities are calling the biggest settlement ever with the corporation.
Yeah, but this is the biggest oil spill ever. I mean, yeah, I've seen estimates of the damage going well over $100 billion.
Correct. Nevertheless, it is the biggest settlement ever. It's involving Alabama, Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas, as well as claims made by 400 local government entities. There's a civil penalty of $5.5 billion under the Clean Water Act. There's also $7.1 billion to the U.S. and five Gulf states, and $4.9 billion to settle economic and other claims made by the five Gulf states. Also, $232 million to cover any further natural resource damage at the end of a 15-year period, and up to $1 billion to settle claims made by more than 400 local government entities. Now, that does not end remaining shareholder lawsuits.
Hmm.
They're still pending.
Okay.
Or looming, perhaps we should say.
Yeah.
What else? That's going on. Well, it's actually an interesting and rather busy time for Wisconsin. Roman Catholic leaders, starting in Iowa, then we'll move on to Wisconsin because we've got various things going on in several different places. Starting in Iowa, Roman Catholic leaders in the early voting state of Iowa today are calling on candidates for president to follow the teachings of Pope Francis and focus as much on the environment and income inequality in 2016 as they have in past elections on opposing gay marriage and abortion.
Whoa. That's not going to go well with the Republicans. I mean,
there are six Roman Catholics seeking the 2016 Republican presidential nomination.
Amazing.
So this is going to be very interesting. And Florida is going to highlight the issues in September. There are also church leaders in Cincinnati and Richmond, Virginia, who plan events related to the Pope's encyclical in August as well.
Wow.
So this is a very interesting pivot. And, of course, the Pope Francis is expected to highlight the issues in September when he makes his first visit to the U.S. He'll address a joint session of Congress and the U.N. General Assembly.
This is such an amazing contrast to 2004 when you had American bishops saying, don't give Kerry supporters communion, you know, because he supports a woman's right to choose an abortion. That's just astonishing.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
So then we go on to Wisconsin. President Obama's traveled to La Crosse, Wisconsin today. He's promoting his overtime plan. This, as you know, he's proposing a Labor Department rule that would make more workers eligible for overtime. So he's going to promote that in the home district of Representative Ron Kind, one of 28 House Democrats who broke party ranks to side with him and grant him broad trade negotiating powers. And it's interesting that the president is he'd long planned this move, this Labor Department rule, but he announced it shortly after the big trade vote, and he's trying to woo back labor.
So we now know what Ron Kind's price was for his vote on fast track authority.
You said that.
I know. We know at least part of his price. You know, these guys all got money too. But anyhow, back to you, Victoria.
Also going on in Wisconsin. Governor Scott Walker, the preacher's son, who withstood a recall election, is planning to file the paperwork today for his long-expected candidacy and will kick off his campaign for the presidency on July the 13th.
Is it a Friday?
Do you know, actually, six? It might. No, the 6th is a Monday.
Yeah,
no.
Okay, all right.
No, he will be the 15th Republican who will have declared. The 13th was Bobby Jindal, by the way.
Yeah, but he's the one who's got the Koch brothers behind him. And you know, their front groups have been mailing out things in Iowa for some weeks now. We've had people call in and say they've been, you know, getting Walker flyers in the mail and Walker emails. And, you know, the Americans for Prosperity machine has been cranking up on behalf of Walker. And I think that's why he's at the top of the Iowa Republican list. The Koch brothers are being very strategic about this, and they now, I think, control the ability to determine who the Republican nominee is going to be.
Interesting. Well, you've been talking about one of the other things going on in Wisconsin, which is, of course, what is 10,000, as they would say on Jeopardy?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the number of people who came to see Senator Bernie Sanders.
10,300, who is the maximum they'd
write in. 10,300.
Yeah, yep.
And he's also doing rather well in Iowa. He's more than doubled his support, according to a Quinnipiac poll out today. He takes 33% support among likely Democratic caucus goers. That's up from 15% in the poll in May. Clinton's support in the poll has fallen from 60% in May to 52%.
When is the Iowa primary or what, a caucus or whatever?
The caucus? I don't know.
Yeah.
Early.
I mean, it's early next year, though, right?
Early next year.
So it's not in the fall of this year.
Cold.
Okay.
Cold weather. That's all I remember.
Yeah, right. Okay. What else is going on?
An investigation into reports of a possible shooting at the Washington Navy Yard this morning ended without incident after a tense lockdown and search. The all clear was announced just after 10 a.m. Authorities found no signs of a shooter or any weapons. Basically, an employee heard noises that sounded like shots and called it in, as they were supposed to.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't anything.
Yeah. I saw a statistic the other day. You keep seeing these signs like in the metro, you know, to say, if you see something, say something. And apparently, since we've started this campaign after 9/11, you know, turning every citizen into a cop, there have been tens of thousands of these phone calls that produced absolutely no results. We haven't caught one single or even found evidence of one single terrorist as a result of a civilian phone call, but it's really using up our police resources. I think this might be an example of it. Victoria Jones, thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. We are, it's Anything Goes Thursday. You're welcome to call about anything you'd like. But I wanted, because the corporate media will not cover Bernie Sanders drawing 10,000 people, other than snarky remarks on Morning Joe, And a tip of the hat to Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow last night for at least mentioning it. But by and large, the corporate media will not cover the fact that, a political earthquake happened last night. 10,300 people showed up in Madison, Wisconsin to hear Bernie Sanders give a speech. Nobody, all of the Republicans together, I believe, have not pulled together 10,000 people in one place. I mean, you know, a big meeting for Jeb Bush is 300 people. You know, it's Hillary drew 5,500 to Roosevelt Island, as I recall. So there's enthusiasm on the Democratic side. Hillary's drawing crowds and Bernie Sanders is drawing crowds. But, oh, let's ignore that. Can you imagine if Ted Cruz had pulled 10,000 people? They would have carried his speech live. If it had been Rand Paul, if it had been Donald Trump, well, they did carry Donald Trump's speech live, remember? That's how he got in all that trouble. And he didn't have 10,000 people there, and half the people he had were paid actors that were being paid $50 for 3 hours to stand there and applaud him. At least according to Hollywood Reporter. Say what? Oh, and Ted Cruz students were forced to attend his from the university? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, see, I think that there's something huge going on here. Clip 17, and this is the, as I've said before, this is the thing that I think is getting Donald Trump traction on the Republican side. I think there's two things that are getting him traction. Number one, he's calling out to the haters about Hispanics. And there's a lot of haters and a lot of racism in the Republican base. But number two, he's also saying our trade deals are stupid and they don't work. And I think that's why Donald Trump is polling 10% nationally. He's the number two Republican candidate. It's because of trade. Well, on the Democratic side, so far, we only have one candidate who is taking this position. Here's Bernie from last night.
But when we talk about jobs, it's not just the need to create millions of decent-paying jobs. It is the necessity to end job loss as a result of disastrous trade policies. You are looking at a senator and former congressman who voted against NAFTA, against CAFTA, against permanent normal trade relations. And I will do everything that I can to defeat this disastrous TPP.
There you go. Just huge applause for this. I mean, it wasn't like somebody stood up and said, oh, wait a minute, Senator, 30 Democrats. Well, actually, it wasn't even 30 Democrats, was it? It was 20. It was 30 Democrats who voted in 93 with Bill Clinton, and 16 of them lost the primary election in the next year. And I think it was 28 this time, 28 Democrats who voted in the House with Clinton or with Obama on this. But anyhow, that's fascinating. Bob in Belvedere, Illinois. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Yes, Tom, I'm glad we got back together again. While I was on hold, the local CBS affiliate in Rockford, Illinois, just had clips on about the Bernie and Madison.
Really?
I was at Madison, yes, the local CBS affiliate in Rockford, Illinois.
Good on them.
Yes, and I was there in Madison yesterday. I'm a Democratic official here in Boone County in Belvedere, Illinois. I was there along with two other Democratic officials in the Central Committee of Boone County. But my observation of yesterday is this. He said a lot of great things, but looking at the crowd of people, there's two things I observed as a Democratic person, and, you know, quite naturally, I'm going to be working hard for Bernie. And that is we need to attract African-Americans. And we also need to attract the suburban vote.
Yeah.
I noticed a lot of people there, obviously, a lot of people there were senior citizens and very young people.
Yep. Well, I think the Bernie coalition so far has been boomers and millennials. And
exactly.
And I agree with you. He needs to be more aggressively reaching out to the African-American community. Although, you know, there's not that large an African-American community in Madison, Wisconsin. But there are people living there. And some of them were in that crowd last night, by the way. You could see from the crowd shots.
No, I saw, yes, and that's true. Now, one thing I'd like to ask you is that, is it true that, did Dr. Cornel West, did he come out and endorse Bernie?
I don't know.
It seems to me that I'm getting messages. I'm a DSA member.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that I'm starting to get some inclination that he is speaking out for Bernie. But he would be a wonderful person that's been involved in a black civil rights movement from day one.
Yeah, he would.
It would be wonderful for him to be on your program and see if I could get some information on how he feels about Bernie's campaign and so on. But Bernie said some great things. Obviously, he's historically in touch with Eugene Debs. You could tell that.
Yeah.
And you know, I would suggest maybe people also reading a little bit of history on Eugene Debs and what he did in our American history, because Bernie definitely talked about Chicago and 100 years ago what happened in Chicago and so on. But I was very enthusiastic about his appearance yesterday. And you're definitely right. But I was, you know, you were talking about the media, and it was amazing because I'm on hold waiting for it to talk to you. And here our local affiliate, CBS affiliate, has coverage about him. So
yeah. Did they play any of his clips where he's saying the things? I mean, we've been picking out the clips that are actual issues.
Correct.
Did they play any of those actual issue clips or just the, hey, here I am, I'm a great guy clip?
Well, obviously, I had to sound down because I was on hold with you, so I couldn't hear.
Okay.
You know. So, I mean, I couldn't. I can't listen to both. So,
yeah.
But what I'm saying is that probably tonight at the 5 o'clock news and so on, I'll have it on and see what they say.
Yeah.
But I'm very enthusiastic. Put it this way: I'm 60 years old, and I've worked on campaigns in many states and many campaigns from the Citizens Party to Barry Commoner, to all sorts of campaigns. And Bernie Sanders is the first guy in my lifetime since George McGovern, but in the early 70s, when the first time I voted. But what I'm saying to you as a person, as a working class guy that is involved in UD activism for a long time and the environmental issues and so on, Bernie is the first guy in my lifetime that could actually bring in a coalition of progressives and environmentalists, civil rights people, union people, the whole a broader coalition.
And I think he can also wake up a lot of the people who consider themselves libertarians or say that they are, you know, Republicans who are social liberals, but, you know, conservative, fiscal conservatives. I think that, you know, when they hear what Bernie has to say, and we had one of them call a little earlier, you know, who called himself an independent, more of a libertarian. This message resonates with them, too. So, Bob, thanks for the call. Last clip for this segment, number 18, about trade unions.
And when we talk about rebuilding the American middle class, we're talking about rebuilding the American trade union movement. There are millions of workers who would like to join unions today but are unable to do so because of illegal actions on the part of their employers. In my view, if 50% plus one of workers in a bargaining unit sign a card asking for a union, they should have that union.
This is a system called card check, where you simply check it off and say, yes, we got a union. And, you know, if you get 51%, and the conservatives are running around going, oh, well, you can't have that because then the union thugs will threaten people. Right. Like employers don't threaten people. Like, you know, the CEO thugs don't threaten people. Like the CEO thugs don't threaten to throw people out of their homes or cut them off from their health insurance. Come on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Anything Goes Summer. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Bill watching Free Speech TV in Joshua Tree, California, on the Dish Network. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Tom, yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling because I'm really concerned about having Hillary as even an alternate to Bernie Sanders. And that's based upon the history of Obama running as a progressive, and then his history has been anything but progressive. From his,
I don't think it's anything but progressive. I mean, you know, he saved Chrysler, he saved GM, he had the biggest middle class tax cut in history. He turned the economy around. We were losing 800,000 jobs a month when he came into office, and now we're gaining 200,000. He's not as progressive as I would like. You know, he increased spending on education. He cut student loan costs. He strengthened hate crime laws. He passed the Affordable Care Act. So, you know, in theory, if the Republican governors would get with it, everybody in the country will have insurance. Expanded child health care CHIP program.
But if I may, Tom.
Go for it. I got a list of another 15 or 20 things he did here that are progressive things. But back to you.
And Tom, I will agree he's done a lot of progressive things.
Yeah, I'm still listening, Bill.
Okay, I stopped because it went silent on me. I'm sorry. That he's done progressive things, but I think if you look at a lot of those items, take the Affordable Care Act, it benefited the drug companies and pharmaceutical companies a lot more than it is to benefit the public. He's created a monopoly that the whole public has to buy health insurance with these companies, and it's just horrible. It's a monopoly.
Well, I don't consider it horrible. I don't disagree with your assessment of it, that it is creating, it's not a single monopoly because you got multiple health insurance companies that in theory are competing in these markets. Had there been a public option, had Joe Lieberman not blown up the public option on his way out of Congress, don't let the door hit you in the backside, Joe. Had Joe Lieberman not done that, there would have been a public option in this thing, and people would have been able to choose, instead of Aetna and Blue Cross and United Healthcare, one of the other options would have been Medicare, and Medicare would have been much less expensive. And eventually, I think that's what we need to do is just, you know, we should lower every year we should lower the Medicare eligibility age by a decade. And at the end of, you know, 6 years or so, you'd have everybody in the United States covered by Medicare.
And I totally agree, as opposed to some of the Republicans wanting to increase those ages.
Yeah, exactly. And we should lower the retirement age to 60, by the way, while we're at it. And we should pay off, you know, everybody's student loan debts. And we can do this in the richest country in America. This idea that has been promulgated since the Reagan administration that we can't afford things. Well, we can't afford things if we're going to continue to give huge tax subsidies to billionaires and transnational corporations and fossil fuel companies. Then we can't afford things. You're right. But Reagan used that excuse when he started these giant tax cuts and these giant tax loopholes for very, very wealthy people and corporations who supported him and the Republican Party. And then he said, now we don't have the money. We can't build new schools. We can't build new hospitals. We can't build new roads. We can't forget about putting a man on the moon. Yeah, we did that back during the Kennedy era. But, you know, taxes were 91% when John Kennedy was president, the top tax rate on the richest people. And, you know, we just can't do that anymore. It's time for somebody to say enough. You know, I'm over it. Bill, thank you for the call. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's past the hour, the place where despair is not an option. Senator Sanders last night in Madison, Wisconsin, drawing 10,000 people, drawing thousands this morning to a little town in Minnesota. Wherever he goes, literally thousands of people are showing up now. This is remarkable. This is a political earthquake that is happening. Clip 19, here's Senator Sanders last night. I'm doing this because I know that the corporate media won't. And people need to hear Bernie's message. They need to hear Hillary's message. They need to hear Martin O'Malley's message. And if any of them give a speech that is this clear and this specific, I will be so enthusiastic to play the clips from it. And frankly, you know, the media is constantly playing the Republican clips, so everybody knows where the Republicans stand. But here's Bernie on the big banks.
And when we talk about greed, when we talk about recklessness, when we talk about illegal behavior, these are just another word, another phrase to describe Wall Street. In my view, and this is a hugely important issue for the future of our economy, it is time to break up the largest financial institutions in this country. Wall Street cannot continue to be an island unto itself, gambling trillions in risky financial instruments while expecting the public to bail it out. In my view, and we've introduced legislation to deal with this, if a bank is too big to fail, it is too big to exist.
And all over Wall Street, CEOs are opening their checkbooks right now to write checks for any Republican they can find, right? Catherine, in Madison, Wisconsin, you were at the Bernie rally last night?
I was at the Bernie rally. I volunteered.
Mm-hmm.
The official count is 10,470.
Wow.
The person, I believe, the couple I believe that came the furthest came from Puerto Vallarta.
Puerto Vallarta, Mexico?
Came back to hear Bernie. I assume they may, I forgot to ask them if they were Republicans. I didn't think of it. They're probably semi-retired down there. They came back.
Wow.
People came up from Illinois. You can find unofficial, meaning not connected to the campaign, Facebook groups all over for Bernie.
Yeah, there's Blacks for Bernie. There's a bunch of them.
Right. Well, there was a young girl. We had a volunteer meeting at the end where a bunch of us got together, and she was speaking about how she's running it 20 hours out of her garage. She has seniors. She has disabled working for her. She is 17 years old.
Wow. Yeah, Youth for Bernie. I've seen that Facebook, I've seen reference to it. I don't know if it was called Blacks for Bernie or African Americans for Bernie. I think it was BFB, something like that.
Well, that's another one. They're all out there. Also, did you know that Cohn from the communication workers is going to stump for Bernie as an unpaid volunteer?
Yeah, I talked about this earlier that, you know, other candidates have a lot of money. Bernie's got a lot of people. And don't underestimate the power of people, because all that money that those other candidates buy, I mean, a lot of it's going to go into television advertising, but a lot of it goes to pay for very, very expensive consultants and very, very expensive people to do all the work on the ground and everything else. And Bernie's getting all these volunteers. I mean, I can't tell you how many people who think that I have some kind of inside track with Bernie because he's been on my show for a decade. And by the way, I don't, you know, I talk to Bernie every Friday, and that's it. We're not, you know, we don't hang out socially, and he doesn't solicit my advice on things, nor I his. We, you know, I just, you know, he's a great guest on this program who I love and respect. But I don't, you know, in any case, so don't contact me if you want to reach Bernie. I'm not the guy, but I get these constantly. I've gotten one of the top speech coaches in the world, the guy who is Princess Diana's speech coach, contacted me a couple of weeks ago saying, how do I volunteer to go to wherever Bernie is and help him polish his speeches? And you know, I forwarded it to the people at Bernie's campaign, but I knew what the response was going to be. Bernie does not want to have his speeches polished. He doesn't, you know, that's not Bernie. Bernie is what you see is what you get. And, you know, and I've gotten a number of other people who have said, you know, how can I help? How can I volunteer? And I just say, go to BernieSanders.com. I'm not, you know, I'm not a gatekeeper here. I'm not an insider, you know, on the Bernie campaign. I'm just a talk show host and an author and an individual who wants to make sure that we have a Democratic president in the next election. And I think Bernie has a really good chance of it. Catherine, thank you so much for the call. Here's another clip. This is number 20. Let's Bernie Sanders last night. These are specific policy prescriptions. Let's end Citizens United.
So let me be as blunt as I can be when I tell you what you already know. And that is that as a result of the disastrous Supreme Court decision in the Citizens United case, the American political system has been totally corrupted, and the foundations of American democracy are being undermined. What the Supreme Court said in so many words is they said to the wealthiest people in this country, they said, okay, guys, you already own much of the economy. Now we are going to give you the opportunity to own the United States government, and that is what they are trying to do right now. Let me be as clear as I can be, and that is that as President of the United States, I will not nominate any justice to the Supreme Court who has not made it crystal clear that he or she will vote and work to overturn this disastrous Citizens United decision.
And Bernie has both sponsored legislation and a constitutional amendment to do just that as well. But this is pretty amazing stuff. And, 15 seconds, not enough time to take a call or play another clip. So but let me make this very clear. If any other candidates give really substantive speeches like this, point it out to us, or if I run across it, I will share it with you. I would love to hear these kind of things from the other Democratic candidates, the Republican candidates. They're welcome to come. Democrats, Republicans, you're welcome to come on this program and take calls from our listeners for an hour if you'd like. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
28 minutes past the hour, back with Anything Goes Summer and clips from Bernie's speech last night right after this. Clip call we're doing. So here's clip number 23, Bernie talking about tuition-free college. Can we have that?
So we've introduced legislation, which I will push through as president, that does two things. Number one, it will make every public college and university in America tuition-free. So we are saying to every kid in America, if you study hard, if you do your work, you will, in fact, be able to get all of the education you need, regardless of the income of your family. It is absolutely unconscionable that we have folks today who are paying interest rates of 8, 9, 10% on student debt, which they are stuck with for decades, yet they can go out and refinance their home for 2 or 3%. So what we've got to do is allow people with student debt to refinance. We've got to get the government out of the business of profiteering off of student debt as well. And when we do that, we can cut student interest rates by more than half.
Yeah, although you won't need those interest rates if Bernie is successful in making sure that every public college in this country is free. That's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing stuff. Bob in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to thank you for your show again. About Bernie, a couple of clips ago, he was talking about the big banks and everything. And my wife used to work for a U.S. Bank, and she worked for them for 8 years. And all of a sudden, they decide that they're going to get rid of their full-time tellers that they're paying benefits and everything for, and yet we're paying for some of those benefits as well. Well, she was dismissed on December the 23rd of last year. And Walgreens, as well as as I do, and all the corporate banks and other corporations, this is exactly what they're doing. And is what they're doing, sir, is they are putting a heavy weight on every state that has to take us in to help us medically with food stamps or whatever else that they have available. And, it's such a disgrace. I just really, really hope that the Honorable Sanders makes it in there. And I thank you for representing him as best as you can, sir.
Well, thank you, Bob. I'm not representing him. I think that we're at one of those incredible moments. This is just an extraordinary political moment. And on TBP, what is the big picture tonight? Oh, that's right. Hillary Clinton to huddle privately with top leaders, APWU President Diamondstein not invited. Oh, he's the guy. Interesting. Bob, thank you for the call. Apropos of what you're saying, that people are being laid off so that their employers don't have to pay for their health insurance, here's what Bernie had to say about health insurance last night. Health care as a right. Clip number 26.
This country must make two fundamental decisions with regard to health care. Number one, in America, health care must be a right for all of our people. And the number two, if we are going to provide health care to all of our people in a cost-effective way, if we're going to take the burden of health care off the backs of small businesses, we need to move to a Medicare for all single-payer system.
There you go, Senator Sanders. So, you know, these are just simple truths, by the way. We're the only fully developed country in the world that does not say that health care is a right. The only one. And somehow Bernie saying that we should join the rest of the developed world is radical or extremist? No, I'm sorry. This is right in this is just so normal. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom, a quick question for you about what Bernie just said. Is my thinking, fill me in if I'm off here about insurance. Wouldn't it be so that to have many insurance companies, health insurance companies competing in the single market would actually have the effect, because of the way insurance works, of raising premiums, because you have a number of smaller pools and premiums go down when you have large pools. Am I missing something?
I think, you know, a statewide pool is a large enough pool to keep premiums down.
Right, but what I'm saying is when you have all of these, a previous caller was talking about Obamacare and how, you know, we have these various insurance companies competing in these different markets, but the optimum condition is to have one pool where, right?
Oh, yeah, where they're competing nationwide. The one problem with that, Paul, is that every state has laws to regulate the insurance industry in that state, and they have an insurance commissioner who executes those laws. And different states have different standards. It's the same way with banking, and it used to be the same way with credit cards. And that you couldn't, you know, have a bank outside the state, and you couldn't have credit cards outside the state. Well, they changed those rules, and now we end up with basically, you know, six banks controlling most banking in America, and all the credit card companies, and basically there's only three of any consequence, Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. You know, issuing their cards out of banks out of North Dakota, because North Dakota has the least strict regulations on credit card behavior. So individual states would lose the ability if you went to a totally national exchange. This is the Republican solution. Let health insurance be sold across state lines.
Right, right.
And the reason why is because they want to race to the bottom in terms of regulation.
Right, but what I'm saying is, I agree. Single payer would be state by state, but I'm saying, for instance, in Washington State, which is a better pool, the entire of Washington State in a single payer exchange, or five, six different insurance companies competing?
Oh, I see your point. I missed that as the point. In other words, if you had a single payer program and everybody in the state was in, you're going to have much lower costs, whether it's a single payer or whether it was just all United Healthcare. You're still going to have lower costs. I mean, United Healthcare would skim it off the top and give it to Stephen Hemsley as dividends. But you're still going to have lower costs because you've got a larger pool. Yes, you're absolutely right, Paul.
Okay. I was just wondering if I didn't know. So I want to talk about the minimum wage, another one of Bernie's planks. The first thing I want to say is that everybody who's listening to this show, in fact, everybody who's working in America today, and 99.99% of the retired people worked under a minimum wage in this country. And that minimum wage was stronger in the past than it is now.
Yeah.
So if you believe in the minimum wage, you have to believe that it needs to be raised from time to time, because it has the effect of like a minimum voltage in a digital circuit. It's not related to, you know, any given voltage requirement for a particular component in that circuit. The circuit itself needs to have a minimum voltage to function properly.
Right. And when I was a teenager, the minimum wage in today's dollars was $12.20 an hour.
Yeah, and in 1968, when it was $1.60, adjusted for now, it would be $17.50.
Let me stand corrected then, because I was thinking of 68. That was the year, 67 and 68 were the years that I was working, you know, at minimum wage jobs in Bob's Big Boy and the Esso station or Exxon station, you know, changing tires and pumping gas for whatever it was, $1.60, if you say. But that was $17 an hour back then. I mean, it was enough to pay for college tuition and the cost of living, actually.
And the same for me. When I started at Michigan State in 1978, I was paying my own way, working at a minimum wage job.
Yeah.
But then the alternative is this. If you don't believe in the minimum wage, you have to believe in an example in America where we had a wage-based economy, yet there was no minimum wage. And that would be what we know as the Gilded Age, from about 1880 to 1938. And so what we had there was a few people got stinking rich, the robber barons. John D. Rockefeller, I read, in adjusted terms, his wealth would have been amassed at $275 billion, three times what the Koch brothers have.
Wow.
And everybody else in the country, there were no unions, there were the lowest wages, and how did it all end up in 1929? That whole thing crashed.
Right, right. And it's going to happen again.
And there were no protections for the little workers.
Yeah.
And so to say that, you know, the minimum wage, and now, the other thing is they say, well, if we raise it to $15 an hour, what about the guy who's making $15 an hour? Should his wages go up? Yeah, everybody's wages should go up. And if it means that the Koch brothers and the rich billionaires have to take a little bit less to make the rest of the componentry in the country work better, yeah, the minimum wage we have seen after the establishment of the National Fair Labor Standards Act, America had its best times ever.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then we got Reagan, and it all changed. Thank you, Paul. Here's clip number 25 about climate change. This is sure to make the Koch brothers hate him and write another check to one of their Republican climate change deniers. Here he is.
The debate is over. The scientific community has spoken in a virtually unanimous voice. Climate change is real. Climate change is caused by human activity, and it is already causing devastating problems all over our country and all over the world. As a nation, we can, as a nation, we must lead the entire world in transforming our energy system away from fossil fuel.
There you go. And the reality is, if you were to take away the $5 trillion in annual subsidies that the world's governments provide to the fossil fuel industry, solar and wind are cheaper everywhere. So what's preventing us from moving forward? Well, the fossil fuel industry owns a lot of politicians. Keep in mind, the Koch brothers inherited an oil empire from their daddy. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Interesting, Jeb Bush has released his financials. His Lehman Brothers, there's a piece over at the Daily Beast, Jeb Bush's Lehman Brothers problem. Welcome back. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind? John? Call us right back if you can't, you know, I can't hear you. Eric in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Eric, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. No, Eric?
This is Earl.
Oh, Earl, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I need to strengthen my glasses.
Okay, calling about Bernie and the networks.
Mm-hmm.
Covering them or not covering them. I don't know if that's by choice or if they're told not to cover him. I think that's the last thing that Fox probably wants to see is a lot of people rallying behind the issues that Bernie's bringing up.
Yeah, Fox is ideologically driven. You know, Roger Ailes does his daily memo. Bill Salmon basically tells all the hosts, here's the phrase to use today. You know, we're going to refer to the terrorist fist jab all day long. You know, and so they have kind of their meme du jour. But it's interesting. The other networks, I think, are by and large, it's this insider-outsider problem. They don't want to put outsiders on TV. Outsiders are unpredictable. You don't know what they're going to say. They might want to rock the boat, and they might say something that works against the interests of the owners of the network. And so, you know, let's get some safe insiders on. And Bernie Sanders is not a safe insider. I think that's the problem. So, you know, the question is, how do you get the word out about Bernie if, you know, I'm the only one talking about him? I'm not the only one talking about him, but, you know,
no,
and I think that it's getting out through Facebook, through Twitter, through, you know, other social media, through his website, BernieSanders.com. I think that there, you know, Bernie said, don't underestimate me. When he first said that, when he decided that he was going to run for president, I thought, well, this is going to be interesting, you know, and I was concerned and even a little skeptical. A year ago, in fact, I was interviewed by 7 Days, the news weekly in Vermont, about whether Bernie might run for president. And I said, I really don't think he will. I don't think that he wants to, create that kind of ruckus. You know, I think he wants to be a good senator. And I was wrong. You know, it's like I'm the first person to say it. So go ahead.
I think if last night was any indication and the amount of support that he's getting, the momentum will just carry him forward as people, you know, become more aware of what he stands for. Up to the people of the U.S. and we got to get rid of these bums in the government.
Yeah. And change the rules of government, because a lot of those bums didn't come there as bums. They became bums because they got corrupted, particularly some of the conservative Dems. They get into office and they discover that, you know, if they really want to do anything, they have to, A, get reelected. You want to get reelected, you got to buddy up with the lobbyists because they're the ones who pass out the money. And then pretty soon they're voting for things like the TPP and, you know, awful things are happening. And then people like me call them conservative Dems and say, you know, we need to primary them. And it gets very, very messy. We just need to get money out of politics, which is, you know, what Bernie has called for, national financing, public financing of our elections. Let's, have nonpartisan commissions like in California, Arizona, redraw our congressional districts so we can do away with gerrymandering. And let's stop these voter suppression laws so that all Americans can participate, all American citizens can participate in our political process. 10 minutes before the hour. Thank you, Earl. Okay, we got 2 minutes of clips, 6 minutes of show, and a bunch of people who want to call in. So what I'm going to do is just quickly run through these clips, starting with number 25. This is, we did Bernie on fossil fuels, didn't we? So all we've got is 27 through 30? Okay, let's just play them back to back, Shane.
In Washington, the debate is often about whether we cut education by 2% or 6%, whether we throw this many people off of health care or that many, whether we give corporations this much of a tax break or that much of a tax break. That's not the worldview that we should have. Our vision should be that in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, there is nothing that we cannot accomplish. We can provide health care to every man, woman, and child as a right. We can make certain that every person in this country can get all of the education he or she needs, regardless of the income. We can create millions of decent paying jobs. We can have the best child care system in the world. In the last 30 years, there has been a huge redistribution of wealth from the middle class and working families to the top one-tenth of 1%. Our job is to reverse that, redistribute wealth back into the hands of working families. Now, in terms of this campaign, I am more than aware that my opponents will be able to outspend us. They have billionaire backers. They have super PACs. They have a lot of millionaire friends. But we are going to win this election. We are going to win this election because if we do our job well, if we develop the grassroots national movement, then I know we can. At the end of the day, they may have the money, but we have the people. And when the people stand together, we can win. Thank you all very much.
There you go. So that was, so basically, if you've been with us all 3 hours, you heard probably 50% of Bernie's speech. I mean, there was so much applause there, so many applause lines in there that it ran over an hour. But anyhow, John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's up? John in Minneapolis? Oh, no. John's on line 10. Call us right back, John. We'll get you on. Diana in Agora Hills, California. Hey, Diana, what's up?
Thank you, Tom. Great show. Sorry, I guess I got bumped off a little bit ago. I'm calling to say that Ed Schultz will be having a whole program today on MSNBC on that Wisconsin speech. He was there. He's going to be reporting on it. I just thought your viewers would like to know. And of all the reporters, he's been the most supportive to the point that other reporters mock his enthusiasm for Bernie.
I agree.
So
also was calling in just to say that I get so aggravated when I hear reporters making snide and hostile remarks about the Bernie campaign and also about the people showing up to hear his speeches. I get online and make another contribution, and I'm already making regular monthly contributions to his campaign. But I can't. I would like to encourage your viewers to do that as well, because I tell you, it makes me feel really great.
Yeah. Well, good on Ed. Maybe I'll run home this afternoon and see if I can catch his show. Ed is an old friend and colleague. He's no longer doing radio, but although he's got a podcast over at Raw Story. And he does a great TV show. And if he's doing an hour on Bernie, God bless him. God bless him. I'm impressed. Diana, thank you for the call. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, just real quickly. I hope you can hear me now.
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, good, good. You know, there is a direct connection. It was brought up on this morning on one of the programs on Free Speech TV between whether people have heard of Bernie and whether your program has been aired. And, you know, what I wanted to talk about was, you know, we do have a constitution that protects free speech, but there's a de facto force that is controlling free speech, and that's money and corporations. So my question to you is there any country that's doing it better, like, say, the BBC-style system where they pay a licensing fee on their TV sets or whatever, and that goes in, and they have, like, an independent board? I mean, right. I don't know. I mean, the BBC, I think it's the largest media organization in the world.
Yes, they are.
I don't know if that
they are, and they're there are layers of independence between them and the government. And,
right.
Yeah. And Tony Blair was not at all happy with BBC when they started revealing that he was colluding with George W. Bush to lie us into a war, for example.
Right.
I think there are a lot of and this is what Lyndon Johnson had in mind when he created NPR and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, PBS.
Exactly.
But then, you know, it was 100% funded by the government back then. Now NPR gets 7% of their money from the government, and the rest of it is coming from foundations and corporations, and that's not a good thing. John, thank you for the call. I don't have a quick solution for it. Andy in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Andy, the last minute is yours.
Bravo on you. We're used to right-wing radio demeaning progressive candidates. But earlier this week or late last week, NPR had an interview with Senator Sanders and referred to him as quirky. And that is exactly the opposite of what Senator Sanders is. Senator Sanders is steadfast.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not quirky. He's genuine. He is
steadfast.
You know, what you see is what you get.
You know,
yeah.
You had a caller saying the bums in Washington, no. They're getting away with what they can do, just like the corporations are getting away with what they can do just because of the way things are.
Right.
The bums are the talking heads in the media, and that goes all the way through all the cable channels, all the regular channels, NPR and PBS.
Yeah, there you go. Andy, thank you for the call. And, you know, if it's true that Ed's going to do at his 5 o'clock Eastern time MSNBC show, he's going to do a whole special on Bernie's speech in Wisconsin last night. Be sure to check it out. And that said, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires your participation. So, Hillary Clinton, call into the show and take calls from my listeners for an hour. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.